Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. And our top story today, understanding how food, diet, and exercise can play a role in Alzheimer's disease. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more is Dr. Jonathan Rasulli with the Staten Island University Hospital. Dr. Rasulli, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, let's talk about, I want to get to the link, potential link, I should say, to food, but let's talk about Alzheimer's in general. There are about 77 million Americans that are inflicted with this horrific disease. I want to get your perspective on that, and are you seeing even greater frequency of diagnoses?
That's a very powerful statement, and it's absolutely true. You know, it's pretty remarkable, that number, every time you think about it. 7 million Americans in this country have Alzheimer's disease, and it's a disease that right now we really don't have any significant treatments for. There's no cure for Alzheimer's. We still don't have a really great way of diagnosing it. And when it's diagnosed, there's really not much we can really do to alter the course of the disease. And as you can imagine, anyone who, people who have a family member, a close family, a friend or a relative who has Alzheimer's, they can truly know how crippling and how life-changing that diagnosis can be. With that being said, with time, we have gotten better at detecting the earliest signs of Alzheimer's and being able to intervene and make lifestyle changes that can really help those patients and really improve their quality of life and their caretakers' quality of life. Some of the things that we've done is, we have better cognitive tests. We have better laboratory tests that can kind of pick up some of the very subtle key things, better imaging tests. We have much more advanced MRI that can detect certain areas of the brain, which are affected by Alzheimer's. If we see them shrinking or becoming smaller, that gives us a clue that this person might be developing Alzheimer's. But still to this day, there's no, one lab test you can take that, it's like yes and no. It's a kind of a grand sum of a bunch of different things that lead us to that diagnosis. But again, 7 million people is a staggering number, and that number continues to increase over time. It's not like it's getting any smaller.
Well, Dr. Rasulli, just taking a step back further, I think what we're talking about, and I think where medicine may be going, and I think with all these diagnostic tools that are out there, we're talking about being more proactive in managing your healthcare rather than dealing with chronic disease as it happens.
100%. Prevention and being proactive about your care is the utmost important, because once those biochemical and pathways have kind of taken place in your body, it's very difficult to reverse what has taken place. It's almost like putting sunscreen on to prevent skin cancer and taking medicine or multivitamins to prevent getting ill. It's the same concept here. What can we do for ourselves? Little things we can do in our daily life, little lifestyle changes we can make to potentially prevent a disease that could be life-changing and irreversible. So it's really worth looking into.
So let's, to that point, and talk about proactivity. Let's talk about the power of what we eat. And look, we talk about obesity, we talk about chronic diabetes. These are diseases, but what we eat could, and I want to underscore could, have an impact on your cognitive abilities somewhere down the line, maybe 1, 2, 7, 10 years down the line.
You are what you eat. That's what I say to all my patients, literally. It's something my mom used to tell me, but it still holds true today. Diet, lifestyle, exercise to some extent as well too, but diet, what we are eating every day, what we're putting in our bodies, what our bodies digest and absorb into our bloodstream, the nutrients we get from these things, it's so important. Interestingly enough, since we have gotten a better understanding of neurodegenerative is a term that we use for diseases such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, something called Lewy body dementia. There's like 8 or 9 different neurodegenerative disorders. And what does that mean? Degenerative. That means degeneration, breakdown. So when the brain is essentially breaking down, I hate to say it that way, but it's basically what it is. And one of the effects of that is losing your memory, and that can be the one of the most startling effects of that. You know, things that you very simple things, forget, leaving, closing the door when you leave, you may forget that. Turning the stove off when you're done using it, recognizing your friends, your family members, where you live, how to get home, all these little things that we take for granted all of a sudden become a struggle for someone with a neurodegenerative disorder. Now, what we have discovered over time, interestingly enough, since we've understood these more, is that there is definitively a link between your gut, and your brain. And if those two are directly interwound, that good gut health leads to good brain health. And that goes anywhere from your oral hygiene, your oral health, to everything, your esophagus, your stomach, your colon, and that all links back to your brain. So literally, you are what you eat. And we're just learning that now in the past 5 to 10 years, that how important diet is to the development and to the management of neurodegenerative disorders such as Alzheimer's.
A really good point. And last question before we go to a commercial break. Are there specific types of foods that we should be eating? And I know, again, that this is not definitive, but we do know that overall health is impacted by what you consume. So are there, I wouldn't say recommended, but foods that people should consider or types of foods that people should consider?
Absolutely. There's a whole branch of science dedicated to understanding and figuring out and identifying which foods in our diet have the most beneficial impact to our brain and neural health. So you literally have scientists studying day in and day out. They dedicate their whole careers to figure out which one, take ginkgo biloba, but don't take this. Take 5 scoops of this, but don't do this. And still, we don't have a good idea of what's good and what's bad. But in general, there are certain trends that are kind of coming out. And remember, these things are not easy to study. It's not like we can take somebody and put them in a laboratory and force them to take a diet and watch them and study them every second of the day. There's so many factors that get into this. But in general, the things that have kind of stood out as being consistently healthy over numerous studies are. This one diet is called the Mediterranean diet, and we can talk a little bit, maybe a little bit more about that after the commercial break. Think ingredients or foods are very high in polyphenols and antioxidants. These are things that directly work on building your red blood cells, your immune system. They boost it. Vitamin C has always been shown to be beneficial, and now what we're getting into more are certain almost spices. Turmeric, for example, has been shown to be very beneficial, or potentially very beneficial in patients who are trying to prevent neurodegenerative disorders.
Well, Dr. Rasulli, I need to take a very quick break. I don't want to, but I have to. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the link between food, diet, and exercise to your overall cognitive health and a lot more. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. We're joined this morning by Dr. Jonathan Rasulli of the Staten Island University Hospital. Dr. Rasulli, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for segment number two this morning.
Thank you so much.
And again, this is an important topic for a lot of reasons, Dr. Rasulli, but I'm thinking about all those caregivers and family members who are suffering with somebody who may be inflicted by this horrific disease and the cognitive decline. I wanted to kind of go back to the food topic for a second. And you talked about, the types of foods, whether it's omega-3s, things with omega-3s or and whatnot. Is there any research or any studies done on, hey, if you skip breakfast or you don't eat dinner, or if you eat five meals a day versus, versus doing intermittent fasting, is there any study or anything related to that, the timing, as opposed to not only what you eat?
So this is a great question, and I get this question a lot every single day from my patients. There's no definitive link between how many meals a day you eat, timing of the meals, whether you skip a meal, and development of Alzheimer's. But what we do see is a link between body inflammation. And that word inflammation is kind of the key concept here, is avoiding a state of your body being inflammatory or having chronic inflammation. And there's certain things that we can do to prevent that. So what we have found is that skipping breakfast, for example, leads to inflammation. Eating too late at night, meaning dinner, like if you eat dinner at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., that can lead to inflammation. So many different things. So many things are so nuanced in many different ways. But in general, again, the old adage, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Generally, you don't want to skip that. If anything, eating too late in the day or eating too late before you go to, or too soon before you go to bed can lead to inflammation and can lead to weight gain. One of the things that we worry about when we eat food, we know when you're young, you can basically, when I was young, you can basically eat anything. I could wake up the next day, I felt great, no problem. Yeah. Everything was wonderful, right? As I'm getting older, I'm realizing I can't really do what I used to be able to do when I was in my 20s. And what can a poor diet or diet that's high in carbs and trans fats and saturated fats and so on and so forth can lead to insulin resistance. And that can lead to diabetes. And that can lead to inflammation. And that can lead to a whole bunch of different things, and it can lead to neurodegenerative disorder. So really, going back to what we were talking about before, having control of your diet, understanding your diet, and treating your diet as you would treat an exercise regimen in many different ways, almost being in tune with and understanding and being, oh yeah, let's eat this, not this, or maybe I should add this to my diet. It's so essential, so important, and such a key thing I tell to all my patients.
And you mentioned talking to your patients. Is this kind of a rule of thumb for practicing physicians, whether you're an internist or a neurosurgeon like yourself? You're I feel like mental health has become a big issue, and many practitioners, whether they're a psychologist or a psychiatrist, they still ask mental health questions. So I guess are the things that we're talking about today, the lucidity, your cognitive ability, what you're eating, is this part of the general conversation that people are getting or having with their internists when they're getting their annual physicals?
It's as important as taking your vital signs. It's so key. It's so important. We have to be sure that we're understanding the patient as a whole. We're not just looking at laboratory values. We're looking at, your temperature is a little high. It's everything taken together that makes that person who they are. We have to do that. And myself as a neurosurgeon, even I'm doing that. Every single time I see my patients, I always try to find out how they're doing, what's going on in their lives. It's a conversation. It's a relationship between the doctor and the patient to make sure that the patient is being treated holistically, not just from an allopathic point of view, but also a total body point of view.
Yeah. And Doctor, kind of just to end our conversation, and I wish I could, we'll bring it back to talk about this more. You talk about some of the advances. Where do you see the research going? I mean, we don't yet have, we have multiple diagnostic tools, but you kind of have to, it's a patchwork quilt, to use my words, not yours, of how to diagnose cognitive decline. How are we doing in terms of the future research? Where are we going in terms of trying to detect this and also remedy, being able to kind of return somebody from where they are and rebuild those memories?
Yeah, it's such a fascinating field. The past 5 years or so have been absolutely breathtaking in terms of the scale and scope of the research studies and the new therapeutics that have developed in the past, in the past, basically in the past 5 years. In terms of diagnosis, we're still developing, we're trying to develop more imaging tests and trying to really fine-tune our MRIs to detect the very subtle nuanced things that we may find on patients with early Alzheimer's. And those are research studies that are ongoing. So ideally, you could potentially get an MRI scan that can detect certain things that can potentially lead to a diagnosis in Alzheimer's. In terms of medications, we have developed and have released certain medications that reduce this type of protein called amyloid, which has been found to build up in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's. And what this medicine does, it reduces that. And it has been shown in some animal studies to be beneficial in the outcome of these patients. It's still very experimental. We still don't really have any long-term data. So it's still something that we're developing, but it's a good step in a strong positive direction. So we're hoping that in the next 5 to 10 years, we can develop some medicine that can really help patients with Alzheimer's. Now, in the surgical sense, where that's kind of where I step in, we have seen development of deep brain stimulation and essentially development of a machine brain interface. So what am I talking about? So that's basically a surgery, a relatively small surgery, to place almost a computer chip, literally a computer chip, on someone's brain with electrodes. And what that chip can do is detect and process brain signals, what that patient's thinking, what that patient wants to do. And then that goes into its own little computer and can output, let's say, some sort of function that the patient wants to do. So we're hoping, and it's still very early, and we're still developing this. But I'm hoping that in the next 5 to 10 years, we're able to develop a chip. Literally a chip that we can put in someone's brain that can help patients, and specifically patients with Alzheimer's, help them with their memories, help them with their cognitive skills, help them function normally in life and gain what they have lost over time. And I think if I'm truly going to go with what I think is really going to be the best therapeutic in the next 5, 10 years, it's going to be that. So, especially with the development of artificial intelligence and machine learning, we can incorporate that with these chips. And we can really see some unbelievable outcomes that we really have not been able to see until now. So it's really a very exciting time, really a very exciting time.
Yeah, and certainly give a lot of families their family member back. Dr. Rasooli, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. And look, like I said, we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thanks, Jeff. I greatly appreciate it. Look forward to it.
That wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow for another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and, of course, another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts. so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.